Golf Smarter number 223 for March 23, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
PGA Tour veteran and Golf Channel contributor Andrew McGee.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com. Granted, we don't have a lot of items on our site, but what we do have is discounted and hand-selected. Two items I'd like to make sure that you're aware of in our Golfers Mart are individual episodes from our archives for only 99 cents each. We have a lot of conversations we've done with mental coaches, and I've made those available, so if you want to hear them, you can. Also, Dixon Earth Golf Balls, the only eco-friendly, tournament-quality golf ball on the market today. Purchase three boxes and get the fourth box for free. Now, if you join Golf Smarter for members only, you can bypass both of those offers because you'll have complete access to our entire catalog of shows, and members can purchase two boxes of Dixon Earth Balls with the Golf Smarter logo and get the third box for free. Also, if you're in the United States, you can become a member of Golf Smarter and get a free box of balls included in your membership. Now, back in February on episode number 216, we did an episode on the 18 greatest mental errors in golf and how to correct them. We promoted Ed Bradley's free ebook at the same time. If you've been at their website, you may have had some trouble downloading the book. No problem. If you're interested in getting the free ebook, go to golfsmarter.com, click on the Hey Fred button, and send me your request. Just make sure you include your email address, and I'll personally forward the book to you. Ed has had a little problem with his website. He's told me about it. He sent me the book so I can send it to you. So just let me know, and I'll be more than happy to take care of you. Many of you may be familiar with today's guest. Unfortunately, when I met him, I wasn't. That's how much I follow the tour, right? But I've told many golfers about his appearance on the Golf Smarter podcast, and the responses range from, yeah, he's on the Golf Channel, right? Or, sure, I've heard of him. He played on the tour. When I went down to Scottsdale last month to play with our Golf Smarter listener who won the trip to the Waste Management Phoenix Open, I was invited to play at the Scottsdale Celebrity Am, and Andrew was my partner. You can see Andrew. I do a short interview with him on our Golf Smarter TV channel on the homepage of golfsmarter.com, and it's also available at youtube.com/golfsmarterTV. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Andrew.
Well, hello, Fred. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. It was really fun playing golf with you down in Scottsdale.
It was?
Well, it was for me because, you know, I've been in these tournaments before, and I've actually never been in a celebrity am, and you were definitely a celebrity. And it was fun because your attitude towards the whole thing was so interesting to me.
Well, it's a bit of a pet peeve for me to see my fellow tour players and the way they act towards pro-ams in general, and we can get into the what I saw after our day on Wednesday at the golf tournament, how pathetic these guys act. But I've always believed, and knowing where the money comes from that helps support these purses on the PGA Tour, it comes from those amateurs you play with on those Wednesday and Monday pro-ams. And, I mean, you generally, all they ask is for you to be upbeat and, you know, be full of some little tidbits of information here and there. You don't have to go crazy. But you hear it time and time again, oh, I got a lousy draw, I got this guy, he didn't say a word, you know, he only said, you heard the story, he only said on the 18th hole, if you make this putt, it's going to make me $1,000, which the guy usually knocks it off the green and says, screw you, pro. Huh. But I generally like the outings. It's always fun to meet new people. It's always interesting for me to see what people do for their livelihood, including you, Fred, now are doing a podcast for Golf Smarter, so it's interesting to learn these things in every business.
Well, thank you. On the video that we did together, you mentioned that this is part of the job of a PGA Tour player.
Oh, it certainly is, and I understand that, and I think, you know, I think, unfortunately, a lot of these younger guys on tour, they don't understand it because they don't need to understand it. They feel because the purses are so great they're making so much money, they're really losing touch of the big picture for a tour player. And, you know, back in the old day, 50s and 60s and 70s, let's say, before purses really started going, I mean, the guys hung out at the golf course all day long. They had dinner there. They had drinks at the country club or the golf club with whoever was left over in the bar. I mean, they usually would get a free meal, you know, for hanging out, but that was all part of it, and hanging out with the people and your amateurs that were maybe club members that played in the Pro-Am that Wednesday at those early tournaments. I mean, those are the guys that fed the purse, and guys appreciated that, and they knew that. And, of course, they weren't making millions of dollars, you know, on the course and off the course like they are now. They were making a nice living. They were enjoying themselves, but it was a hard life. You know, a lot of guys didn't fly in airplanes. They drove until you know, air travel became popular and affordable, you know, later on, maybe in the 60s. But, you know, I think these guys, I always tell people that I'm not really worried about my generation of guys. I mean, we have our pension plan with the tour. I mean, guys 20, 30 years ahead of me that played in the 60s and, you know, maybe late 50s, 60s, and early 70s, really, you know, they had to work really hard for everything they got. They don't have a pension plan like we have now, and they're really struggling.
Mm. It's interesting. You're not that old to be an old school kind of guy, but you're really an old.
I was born at the wrong time, Fred.
No, but you're an old school PGA Tour player, aren't you? You're a throwback.
Well, you know, I'm not really a throwback. My friends are all older than me. You know, I do like hanging out with the older guys and I listen to their stories because they have stories. You know, these young guys don't have any stories. Mm-hmm. You know, they're so self-absorbed with, you know, me and how do I get my putting stroke better and, you know, how me. It's just so much. They don't have any stories. They don't have any experiences that are fun and fun-loving to me. You know, I like the characters that are self-deprecating and who have gotten a bit of trouble out there, which most guys do on the road, and they have interesting stories to talk about. I think these guys today, it's going to be breakfast at the club, 18 holes, you know, I shot 70, blah, 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 had dinner with the wife, went home to the motel, you know, and then over and over and over and over every day and every month, and that's all you get. So I do, I'm not sure if I'm an old soul, but I like the older guys. I love the stories, and that's probably more important to me looking back than anything else in my career.
Well, the young guns today, they're in a very different microscope than you were in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Absolutely.
Or I guess you started in the 80s, right, on the tour?
I started in 85 was my rookie year.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk, even the 80s and 90s. I mean, it's a completely different beast than it was, than it is now. And these guys are under a much different microscope.
Well, we can thank one guy for that. And he has kind of made golf cool, you know, and made golf popular with the masses, with the underprivileged and whatnot. So, yeah, we can thank Tiger for you know, getting golf up to par with all these other sports monetarily. And we can thank him for the worldwide popularity and all the money in all everybody's pockets since then. But that's exactly right. Guys are under the TMZ microscope now and yeah. Everybody knows it.
What a shame.
What a shame. You know, golf is just, it shouldn't be like one of those sports because the guys aren't that, you know, braggadocious type of guys that are looking for the limelight. Most tour players are really trying to shy away from the limelight. And, you know, a good example is my friend Craig Perks, who's a New Zealand gentleman who played at Oklahoma where I played, came out and he chipped in a couple of times on 16 and 17 at the Players' Championship. And then the 18th hole, I think he chipped in again, maybe three in a row, to win the Players' Championship in Jacksonville. And before that, he'd really been just a mediocre player and hadn't had a ton of success. I can't recall if he'd won one of the tournament or not, but he ended up winning like the fifth major, we call the Players, in Jacksonville. And the media storm that hit him completely caught him off guard. And it really kind of ruined him. I mean, he didn't, the pressure, he didn't realize now he had to perform up to that and try to win majors and many tournaments. And he didn't like talking to the press. And he just completely went south and went the other way. And now he's off the tour. And, and doesn't play that well. And so I think guys, you know, I appreciate those guys that are reluctant to talk to the media. I don't think we owe the media that much. But then, of course, we're seeing now some young guys that love the attention and who might not do that great a job with it.
No. And how has the relationship with the press changed from the mid-'80s to today? With the golfers?
There's a lot more press.
Yeah.
I mean, every the media tents at every golf tournament, you know, have hundreds of reporters there from every town and corner of the world to report, not just big tournaments, but let's say the Honda Classic this week in Florida. I mean, that media in 1985 might have been, you know, 20 guys. I bet you there's 150 there, 100 there right now, reporting on, you know, the different person on tour, because with this, it's such a melting pot on the PGA Tour. Now, guys are from all over the world playing, and there's a representative from that media department in that Colombia and Spain and, you know, South Africa, all over the world, in Japan, they're all there, and with their compliments and their people that hang on to them, and so it really has changed in the scope and the size and
right. But what about the relationships? I mean, you know, when you were starting out, were these 20 guys that were covering golf and reporting for everybody, were they friends with the golfers?
Yeah, they were definitely friends.
But they kept things close to them.
We would have drinks together. Yeah. We'd have dinner together.
And you could trust these guys?
I think you're right. You know, I think so. And if you told him not to write that, he wouldn't write that. But I think nowadays, guys are, there's so much competition, they're writing everything. And but you're right, the relationship, let's go way back. I mean, guys, Dan Jenkins hung out with Ben Hogan and got, you know, great tidbits from Ben Hogan over drinks and dinner during the middle of a tournament. I mean, nowadays, a reporter could never probably go to dinner with a player, you know, and just be friends, I think, and be off the record. Mm-hmm. I mean, not never, but it doesn't really happen like it used to happen.
No, but you got to have an NBC credential type of thing. You've got to be with one of the big boys to get any kind of access.
Well, you got to be with Golf World or Golf Digest, or mm-hmm. you got to be one of the recognizable name guys that you know. And you know, as you're on tour for a long time, you get to know guys, and you know what they're like and what they're writing about. But there's a whole lot more of them now, let me tell you that.
Oof. And back in the 80s when you were a rookie, what kind of attention on youth did they have versus today? It seems like because of Tiger, there's, you know, young players coming up, and there's a lot of them just this, you know, at the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
You know,
when I was a rookie in 85, Gene Sowers, a guy from South Carolina, and myself were the youngest two players on tour, about 22 years old, and no one paid attention to us. You know, we weren't winning tournaments. We might have had a bit of a college background to say we might win the tournament someday, but there wasn't any attention. I mean, you had to prove yourself. You had to win a tournament. You had to contend for tournaments. You really had to be there quite often. Now I think there's so much bigger media outlet that they need to fill content. So there's all kinds of stuff on PGAtour.com right now or Golf Channel. I mean, you can just go anywhere and find golf content like Golf Smarter, right, on this podcast we're doing. But it's completely different world.
Yeah, well, excuse me for continuing this line of question because, Golf Smarter, I don't cover the tour. I don't, because why compete with all of those guys? I don't talk about golf. I talk about golfers, you know? And so to me, this is really interesting because I don't spend a lot of time with it. Do you think that they're, you know, these young guns that are coming up seem to be able to hit the ball really far? I think that's what is so much attention is brought to them, but do they have the mental capacity to contend? And we're not talking about Tiger. We're talking about the rest of them now.
Oh, Tiger's, I think so. I mean, we're seeing, we've got a great influx of young players, Anthony Kim and Rory McIlroy and Camilo Vijegas. And I mean, there's quite a few. I need to list in front of me. There's a really good group of guys that it's like any other sports, you know, and the young guys are hitting the major leagues now and they're ready to win. They've been trained better, training and guys are much more disciplined. They've learned from all these extra coaches and ways to learn. When they get there, they're not afraid to win and try to win. And I think guys were in the past, let me say my year in 85, I mean, I didn't feel like I was even close to winning a tournament when I came out on tour. I felt like I needed to go through the process. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to keep my card. I wanted to finish in the top 10. I wanted to finish, you know, top five. I wanted to have a chance to win and maybe not win and be hungry to win and then win and go through the whole process, the whole ladder of stepping up and deserving it from my peers. I mean, guys can come out right now, their first tournament as a professional, and win a tournament. You know, I'm sure that's happened in the past. Jack Nicklaus might have done it. And this Ben Crenshaw actually probably won his first tournament. I think he ever played as a pro in Texas. But guys are, this is such a deeper pool of guys right now. They're ready to win. They're mentally prepared to win. I don't how they accept winning and the money and the media is a different story. Maybe sure. not as gracious and as dignified as guys in the past who they really had to earn it, you know, who really thought about it. I mean, when you go out and win your first time, you really don't have time to think. You just kind of react and you go, and it's just $1 million in your pocket. And, I mean, how are you supposed to act? Crazy.
Well, yeah, when you're 22.
You're supposed 22... to be fun. You're supposed to go to a strip club and get a new Mercedes. You're supposed to get in trouble, aren't you?
Well, at that age, yeah, no. You are supposed to do that. You're just, but when you're under a spotlight like that, it's difficult to do it. I mean, you have guys like back at the President's Cup when, you know, one player accused another of being out till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Which was kind of goofy, wasn't it? Why did he accuse that guy? Because he'd already been beaten by him, right?
Right.
He'd already been beaten by him, and it makes him look even worse that he got beaten by a guy that was out till 4 in the morning, drunk, and he comes out and waxes you. Shut up. That was really out of character for Robert Allenby. He's really a great guy and kind of quiet, and you don't really see his voice in the media that much. So that was kind of – he was very frustrated, obviously. I don't know, but I was like, wow, I thought didn't he just beat you? You should be like, you know – pretending you don't know anything about anything.
Yeah, why would he? Why would you think he would?
I don't know.
So...
Maybe I got the story wrong. I don't know.
I don't know. I think we
like, wow.
Unless there's some basis of truth, but so what? He still beat you.
It doesn't matter. I mean, we're on the PGA Tour. Guys are free agents. We don't have a boss. You know, Tim Fincham's not our boss. We can do what we want to do. There is no curfews. There's no rules. I mean, just you can't drink on the course. You can't do that. Maybe some guys have in the past. You know, we really don't have a lot of rules. We can be police ourselves, and, you know, most of the time they do a pretty darn good job of it.
Yeah, but there are tremendous distractions that are presenting themselves at all times to these kids. Different than distractions. I mean, you and I have kids who are similar in age and they're in their 20s, and you know, they have distractions too, but they're not under a media spotlight.
Well, they don't have attractions and $1 million, $2 million, $3 million bucks in their pocket either.
Right, that's true.
You know, that money thing, you know, coming to a kid who came from a middle-class background who all of a sudden he wins a tournament in his rookie year and he's got $1 million, that's a big deal. I mean, that's a lot of money. How do you handle that? I have no idea. That's just so difficult to not let it go to your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I see guys carrying on and having a good time, I just go, bless your heart. You should. Have a great time. You know, don't spend it all because someday you're probably going to regret it.
Yeah. Is that good for golf or bad for golf?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know if it's good or bad for golf. We're all human beings, and it's just human nature. I mean, what I see a lot from friends and amateurs I play with all the time and then tour players is we don't show our joy enough. We don't show our happiness. All we show is our head down when we hit a bad shot. We don't give ourselves enough positive, you know, happy reinforcement. We don't feel that. And I've learned this from Chuck Hogan, you know, the great Chuck Hogan, who was spending some time here in Phoenix years ago, and he's a golf instructor and a bit of a psychologist. And we had some, you know, he'd teach some girls and some Swedish girls on the range down here at the Raven South Mountain in Phoenix. And he was trying to get these girls, because the Swedish girls don't show any emotion at all, you know, trying to get them to show, to say yippee skippy or jump up and down on the range when they hit a good shot, and they couldn't do it. You know, he was like, feel the joy all the way down the end of your toes. Sit there and close your eyes and feel that. Well, they felt foolish. I mean, but I understand that. I think that's what a lot of our guys are lacking, And, you know, in a lot of amateurs out there playing, everybody's so hard on themselves in this game that we don't feel the joy enough. We don't feel the happy, the good feelings from hitting a good shot. All we do is remember the 55 bad shots and go home with that bad feeling. And I think we really got to do a better job of being happy, being, you know, happy with ourselves that we did a pretty good job, and that's all you can get. That's all you get.
More yippy skippy.
More yippy skippy. Close your eyes, Fred. Try to feel the joy down into your toes. I can do it. I can feel that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because during the round, you and I were talking throughout, and I was telling you about these, you know, these swing changes that I'm going through and working with a physical therapist, TPI instructor on you know, fixing body and whatnot. And you said, and at one point you said, dude, you're thinking way too much.
Yeah. People think too much. We all do it. We get lessons and we go out to the golf course and we still try to work those lessons through our round of golf, and that's the wrong time to do it. You know, there's a practice tee and there's a golf tee. And once you get on the golf course, you let yourself go. Try to enjoy that 4 hours you spend walking the beautiful green grass and leave your technical, mechanical side on the range. And when you finish playing, if you want to go back to the range and work on something, great. But we all do a terrible job of separating that. I'm guilty as anybody else. You've got to rip. If you want to play your best golf, I mean, it's like you got to become a Zen master out there. You've got to get past first grade in elementary school. You've got to get away from learning and all this education, and you've got to become your Zen master. You've got to become that guy who just lets it go and you enjoy it. You get all everything out of it you can, then you let it. You leave the golf course, and then if you want to work on stuff, do it then. But don't work on the golf course. That was good advice right there, Fred.
It's excellent advice, Andrew, but you're a golf professional, and, you know,
we should all try to do it.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of...
You've got a good swing. Your swing plane's fine.
Thank you.
You've got a good posture. Your grip's fine. Fundamental, you're very sound. You know, I don't care if you're a 100 shooter or a 65 shooter. You know, you've got to try to figure out how to approach your day and enjoy your day on the golf course and not be mechanically and technically involved with every little angle and dangle. If you do that, you got to understand that's going to take away from your score. I mean, it's simple as that.
It's a game.
It's a game. Treat it like a game.
And treat it
Don't treat it like you're. Don't treat it like you're trying to fix your car engine.
But it's also a passion. It's more than just a hobby. It's a passion. We want, you know, we're competing against ourselves all the time, and we're beating ourselves up all the time, and we don't get the amount of time we'd like to practice. I mean, everyone always asks, "Do you play a lot of golf?" And the answer is always the same for every golfer, I think. Never enough.
Yeah.
We always want to play more, but life gets in the way.
Well, I mean, that's why people envy my life so much.
Exactly.
I play a lot of golf.
That's what I want to hear from you.
You know, it's my job, and it's my passion. And I haven't been on tour for 3.5 years now, and people are like, you know, what do you do? You know, I said, well, I play golf. You know, I kind of left the tour when I did, and it was like, I got to get a job. I want to, you know, do something. I want to do something substantial in my life. I've just been a golf bum my whole life. I really haven't done anything. You know, here we go. And then as I thought about it more and more, I said, you know, all I really know is golf. My passion is golf, and it's my life. And if I can find something to do with golf, like, say, Golf Channel, that's kind of involved in the same deal. I'm not going to go and jump and be a stockbroker. You know, I don't know, I have a clue about that. I got to start from scratch, and I wouldn't be good at it. But I've got a good in golf, and I tell people that all the time. A lot of friends of mine come and ask me about their job, and they don't like what they're doing. I say, well, what are you good at? What's your passion? What do you really want to do? What do you really want to do? What do you do when you go home when you don't have anything else to do? What do you do? Do you paint? Do you go swimming? What do you do? I mean, use that passion for your next job. I mean, whatever you really, really want to do, that's what you should do. And because so much of us are stuck in a job we don't like, and I've been very fortunate that I found golf at age 11. We moved across the street from a golf course from London, England to Dallas, Texas. Luckily, right across the street from a golf course, and I became a golfer at that about a week after moving there, or I'd be in jail now. So it was a very fortunate move for me. It's my life's work and my life's passion. Sometimes it may not look like it, but I'm always thinking. I'm getting putting lessons this morning. I've got Bay Hill coming up in Orlando. I like to perform well. I don't have high expectations, but I like to go and surprise people. And, you know, so be passionate. If you can do it, be passionate, but don't be mechanical. I can throw that back in there again.
There you go. Got to get your digs in, don't you, buddy?
Yeah.
Well, listen, we are running out of time, but I know that you have so many more incredible stories to tell, and I would love to pick your brain about life on the tour and fans and what it was like leaving the tour. Could you come back and share some more stories with us next week on a Members Only episode?
Absolutely, Fred. That sounds great. I had a lot of fun being with you, and I hope to see you again soon.
So you know that when you go out and play these any golf tournament, there's someone there taking pictures. What was really cool is that Andrew signed all of our pictures, so I've posted my autographed picture of Andrew and our foursome on our Golf Smarter Facebook group and on today's blog entry at golfsmarter.com. Check it out. I'm the one on the far left. Andrew, or his far right. Andrew has a lot more to say, and he'll return for part two of this conversation on next week's Members Only episode. So I encourage you to join now so you can listen to part two with Andrew McGee, and part two with Dr. Joseph Parent, part two with Tom Wishon, part two with Ann Grassel. Clearly see a pattern emerging here, don't you? If I'm able to have a person on the phone for longer than 30 minutes, the conversation usually gets much deeper and the stories get far better. So please, become a member. Take advantage of our special offers. But more importantly, if you enjoy listening to this podcast regularly, then there's a lot of entertaining and informative content you're missing. A short thank you to all of you who responded to my show close from last week. After part two with Dr. Joseph Parent on the Members Only episode, Joanne and I appreciate your kind thoughts and warm wishes. If you're familiar with these type of things, you know that time is the best prescription for recovery. You know, I'm always interested in having you send me your favorite quotes to end each show, whether it's humorous or a great piece of advice while playing. I'd like to share it with our global audience. Today's quote, I've used it before, but I like it so much that as we start a new season of play, I want to share this very important reminder when you head out to play. This was told to me by Jay Shea while we were playing together at his club in Sonoma. Jay is a longtime listener as well, and I use it practically every single round, either to myself or to my playing partners. And we're all guilty of this, so make sure you think of it regularly too. Never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot. Next week, for Members Only, Part 2 with Andrew McGee. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or quotes, I'd love to hear from you. Just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.